seaweed, their methane emissions fall by as much as 95 or even 99%, which means that if we legislated that all cattle farmers fed their cattle seaweed, that we wouldn't have to worry about the impact of eating beef. We could just eat beef guiltlessly. Or if we invested aggressively in lab-grown beef and didn't involve animal suffering at all, we would still be able to have the pleasure of those meals without imposing any carbon footprint on the world. And there are really those kinds of solutions almost everywhere you look. There are some sectors that are a little harder to decarbonize, for instance, air travel, some sectors of industry. But there's exciting, interesting technological movement on those fronts, too.
We have 10 seconds. Why you chose the title, The Uninhabitable Earth?
The short answer is for hyperbole. I think that we need people to be alarmed. And while I think true uninhabitability is vanishingly unlikely, it is conceivable. And the fact that we've brought it into view at all is a huge indictment of everything we've done over the last few decades.
Well, David Wallace Wells, we want to thank you for being with us, deputy editor and climate columnist for New York Magazine. His new book titled The Uninhabitable Earth: Life After Warming. That does it for our show. We have a job opening, accepting applications for a full-time one-year paid news fellowship. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Tay Marie Astudio, and Libby Rainey. Special thanks to Miriam Barnum, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
KAB Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
Roasting 200 years of corporate constitutional rights, 1819 to 2019, notes the anniversary of the first U.S. Supreme Court decision granting constitutional rights to business corporations. The event features a photography exhibit, trivia, conversation, and presentations about how we can reclaim people's constitutional rights and dismantle corporate rights. Again, that's Roasting 200 Years of Corporate Constitutional Rights on Thursday, February 28th from 6 to 9 p.m. This is a drop-in event happening at the Just Bob Cafe, 2403 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and Voices from the Edge is up next.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty. Today, we're going to be talking about a little thing that the Portland City Council did in October of 2018. The City of Portland passed a ordinance, which is basically they passed a law in October of 2018 that would require building owners of unreinforced masonry buildings to put placards on their buildings to notify tenants and shoppers and others that the building may be unsafe in a earthquake, in a major earthquake. The way this was rolled out was as of January 1st of this year, all the publicly owned buildings were to have placards attached to their buildings, and that in fact did happen. And as of November 1st, 2020, buildings owned by nonprofits were supposed to have those upgrades done. And all other businesses were supposed to have those improvements done by March 1st. Needless to say, when I took office, the first thing I heard over and over and over again was about this mandate for systemic seismic upgrades. And basically, here's the issue. The issue is brick buildings in a major earthquake and we anticipate, especially those that are old and historic, built around the 1900s, we expect in a major earthquake that those buildings would fall down, right? So it's not rocket science, because those buildings were built long before the new seismic requirements were in place. Now, so when I came in office, the first thing I was hearing from people was this government mandate with no resources, and people were rightfully very upset. They felt like they were not notified, even though there had been a work group that had been meeting for 2 years to discuss what the city council should pass as far as ensuring that people upgraded their buildings. Most people did not feel like they had been duly notified, and they did not have an opportunity to really weigh in on what the city council both proposed and then ultimately passed on October 10th, 2018. I think one of the important pieces is that this ordinance was passed by a 3-0 vote. And it's not that people voted against it, but two commissioners left the room, so they didn't have to vote on it. And so it clearly was not a unanimous decision of Portland City Council. So I have heard from faith leaders, I've heard from nonprofit leaders, I've heard from apartment owners, business owners, small business owners, and I've heard across the board that people were really freaking out. And here's the reasons why. The ordinance required that the placards be put up, and I told you the dates that they were required to be put up. But the other thing that made people just a little out of control was the requirement that they go to Multnomah County and have this information recorded on their title, which many people saw as basically it was a lien against their property. I've had many conversations with Multnomah County about whether or not this requirement would be perceived as a lien. Multnomah County says no. However, I also know that people who were trying to get a bank loan, or if they were trying to sell their building, if that showed up on their property records, then they would not be able to get the loan to actually do the upgrades that we say we want them to do. And so after listening to a lot of people over the last 8 weeks, I started working on a plan last month, quite frankly, to slow this process down so that business owners would have an opportunity to both be at the table and help us develop the policy, but in addition, for us to determine whether or not we could identify some public money that could assist some of the most needed nonprofits and small business owners. And so what we know is that small business owners, there's already a tax credit that they have access to, but nonprofits, because they don't pay taxes, don't have access to tax credits. And, you know, quite frankly, it's across the board. So you've got very small business owners to very big business owners that are all impacted by this. So anyway, so that was the situation as of October 10th. Just yesterday, I proposed a ordinance that would actually put this entire process on hold until November 1st, 2020. And the reason that I have submitted that, and it is now working its way through the city council process, the reason is because it's important to me that we're not using a hammer when a carrot would be much more effective and efficient. It's important to me that we listen to the business community's concerns, we listen to the nonprofits and faith leaders' concerns, and that we take those into account as we develop the policy moving forward. So I am confident. So yesterday we had the first reading at Portland City Council. It will come back on the City Council agenda, I believe, next week for an official vote. And I anticipate that my resolution to kind of basically put this whole process on hold for until November 1st, 2020, will be a successful resolution, at least for the moment. There was lots of public testimony yesterday at City Hall about this particular issue, and just about everybody who testified said that we should just repeal this ordinance and we should start over from scratch. Because I am responsible for one of the bureaus who is assigned to provide oversight of this implementation, and that's the Bureau of Emergency Management. I actually directed the Bureau of Emergency Management and the Fire Bureau to not start this process that was supposed to start as of March 1st. In addition to that, I should say that there is a group of business owners who have filed a lawsuit against the City of Portland, and there has been an injunction put on this process by a federal court for 60 days because it is believed, and apparently they've been reading the paper as well, that the City of Portland will have a solution coming up that will negate having to do a discovery process with the courts. If you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. I was very impressed with the testimony yesterday. There were really a lot of angry small business owners who just feel like, once again, the City of Portland is just mandating something for them without any consideration to how it would impact their bottom line. So what are we doing at the City of Portland? One thing we're doing is supporting a legislative bill that had its first hearing, I believe, earlier this week, a bill that would provide some funding at the state level for these buildings across the state. Now, the City of Portland has 1,600 of these unenforced masonry buildings, but there are 10,000 of them in the state of Oregon. And they, if you think of any main street and little towns all across Oregon, most of them have these brick buildings that would not withstand a serious earthquake. There was a list of buildings that were put together. I am still doing my due diligence to find out, like, how did the list even get developed? I haven't been able to get a really clear answer about how that happened. Based on the public testimony yesterday, I was told that the City of Portland kind of drove around and recorded any buildings they saw that fit that criteria of being unreinforced masonry. If that is the case, then that is really not the most effective way to figure out whether a building is sound enough for it to withstand an earthquake. I think one of the big issues is that the city has a lot of properties that we own that fit that criteria as well. For example, City Hall. If there was a major earthquake, City Hall would just crumble. There's no doubt about that. But there's really no plan at the moment to do the reinforcements necessary on all the publicly owned buildings that the City of Portland has under its control right now. And so next week, we will have a vote. I would encourage you to come out and check out that vote. I also would encourage you to go to sign up so that you can be part of the new task force that's going to be put together by the Bureau of Emergency Services. If you went to the City of Portland website and put in if you URM task force, you will be able to pull up an application. The committee is now taking applications from community members who want to be part of the committee. And I think they're looking for a well-rounded committee, including people with expertise in seismic upgrades, building owners, residents, faith leaders. And so it's really supposed to represent those most impacted by the city council action and decision. So I would definitely encourage you, if you own a building, if you live in one, I understand that there are most of the housing that people can afford to live in today, if it's a brick building, chances are it is on this list as well. And so one of the big issues has been a concern by landlords that they if they have to notify tenants that the building that they're about to move into might fall down in an earthquake, they believe that they will have some economic impact by that. And Portland's not the first city to actually have undertaken this effort. I think that the goal is very lofty, and it is absolutely a necessary goal. I don't believe anybody wants buildings falling down on people and a massive earthquake, and we want to do everything in our power to make sure that we are resilient after whatever natural disasters hit our city. However, not sure that this would be the top priority if we're talking about what do we need to protect, what do we need to be concerned about when the big earthquake hits. And, you know, we keep hearing it's going to hit, and I believe it will. I just don't know when. If you'd like to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. So this week was public testimony. Next week, there will not be public testimony. But if you want to weigh in, please feel free to email the entire city council. And it's always better if you email the entire city council on one email, so that way we know everybody else is in that communication loop. And so email the entire city council, including the mayor. Let them know what you think about this issue. And feel free to come to city council next week and talk about whether, well, actually, I'm sorry, you won't get a chance to testify, because as I said, the testimony and public testimony was this week. So I'm excited about hitting the pause button on this particular ordinance, taking the time to talk to those most impacted, and coming back to the city council prior to November of 2020 with an alternate plan that gets us to the goal that we are looking for. I think that that is the right approach to take, and I'm happy to say that several of my city council colleagues feel that that's also the appropriate avenue to take. So that was yesterday. Today at 2 p.m., at the Portland City Hall, we will be passing an ordinance to actually implement into city code the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Initiative. Yay! You may remember this was a community-led effort to address climate, economic, and racial justice all in one nice little sweet package. And so the coalition, which I'm proud to say that I helped put together, collected 35,000 signatures in less than 5 weeks, got this placed on the ballot, and it won by a 67% margin. This measure, you might remember because you voted on it, this measure did a couple of things. First, it increased the business income tax on large retailers with $1 billion of national sales, and that's with a B, and $500,000 sales in the city of Portland. If a retail operation reached both of those criterias, then they would be required to pay an additional 1% on their as a business income tax proposal. What we believe is that this initiative will bring in somewhere between $50 and $80 million annually that will be invested in climate mitigation, energy efficiency, job training, prioritizing those left out of the economic engine. So prioritizing people of color, low-income people, underemployed folks, and making sure that we are building the green workforce for the future. I am so, so happy to be on the other side of the table today to both present this measure for a vote, as well as talk about the incredible work that some incredible community organizations did in order to both get it on the ballot, to make the case to the public as to why this measure should be passed. And then kudos to the voters who saw through all the rhetoric that the Portland Business Alliance tried to say that this measure would cost poor people, I think, something like $2,500 a year, which made no sense to me at all. And I certainly didn't think that Portland Business Alliance would be the voice for people who were low income and would possibly have a negative impact. And so I expect that we will have a full city council chamber this afternoon for our 2 p.m. city council meeting. And I expect that there will be a lot of people testifying about the opportunity that this measure presents. And so if you're interested, if you worked on it, if you collected signatures at your faith institution or your community-based organization, this is a great opportunity to come and reconnect and really make sure that people understand why this measure is going to be such a game changer. And I promised, and I still am promising, that I'm keeping my eyes on it, because, you know, when you're bringing in 50 to 80 million new dollars annually, there's always somebody that's trying to get their hands on the money. And it's normally not the people who are supposed to benefit by it. And so being at the city gives me the opportunity to really make sure that those who were supposed to benefit finally benefit from a city council initiative. Because I've seen way too many of them, unfortunately, over the years, that start off with very good intentions. And when you look at what the outcomes are, you find out that the same people have been the beneficiaries of any opportunities that were presented. So give me a call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And I want to let you know that Mayor Wheeler and Chief Daniela Outlaw, are having a community listening session this evening. It will be from 6 to 8 p.m., and it will be at Maranatha Church. And that is located at 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue, from 6 to 8 p.m. This listening session is an outcome of us learning last week about a Portland police officer having a very cozy relationship with the Patriot Prayer, organizers. In fact, to the point where it's giving them information about how Portland police were deploying resources and where anti-white supremacist organizers were meeting up. I found it very troubling when I went through and read over 150 emails over the weekend from this officer. And I, you know, there are law enforcement saying, oh, that's just good police work. It is not good police work when you're giving away tactical information and you're encouraging people who have a warrant out for their arrest to behave in a certain manner. I was very troubled by that. I hope this listening session has a positive outcome tonight. And I also hope that Mayor Wheeler and Chief Outlaw come immediately with a plan for a truly independent investigation of this activity within Portland Police Bureau. It is very important to me that we, in fact, make sure that we have an independent investigation. And when I say independent investigation, I mean having someone from a national organization like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference coming in and actually doing the investigation. We are no longer comfortable with having Portland police investigate themselves, nor are we comfortable with using the status quo systems like the independent police review system to investigate the police. We've never seen any positive things come out of that. And so having a truly independent person with no stake in the game, but who has a high degree of respect by the local community, is going to go a long way towards starting to rebuild trust between the public and Portland Police Bureau. Good morning. I have a caller.
Hello?
Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Dennis.
Hi, Dennis. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Listen, concerning the definite possibility of an earthquake, I just would like to say maybe you should have some input from actual seismic scientists on committees, because that would be very, very good for people who are investigating this. I could mention that from my understanding, there are two places where this is being studied. One is Oregon State University, And the other is the University of Washington. In both those places, they have people who have
expertise in this area.
Absolutely.
Yes, you're absolutely right. In fact, we did have, before this was rolled out, there was actually a two-year task force that had that kind of expertise on it. Unfortunately, and I wasn't there, I don't know why this happened, but the recommendations that they made from that initial task force were not accepted by the city council.
Oh,
and the
God.
City council came up with this, what they thought was an easy solution, which was to tell people to put these placards on the front of their building. But again, so, you know, and I also know that California did this a few years back. And every city implemented it a little different. And so in cities that had public resources to assist, that gave people a long period of time to make the upgrades happen, there was very little demolition. And so think San Francisco. San Francisco had, I think, like a 5% demolition rate. However, San Diego, where they gave people a very short period of time, no public assistance, they ended up with a 28% demolition rate. And so that is the fear that I've heard from faith institutions and other folks who say this is really just a taking thing, right? People just really want to tear down our buildings and put those new steel ugly things up.
Yeah, I don't... Thank you very much for this. I don't think that... I can recommend one person at Oregon State I've talked to, who I don't know what side he would take on this. His name is Chris Monsos.
Chris, what's his last name?
Monsos, M-O-N-S-O-S-O-A. I'm sorry, S-O-S. And I don't know whether he's still there. I talked to him about 10 years ago, but he might. I mean, his point of view would be very... was stable. I mean, it wouldn't be. He would not be catastrophic in his point
right.
of view.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the recommendation. I will check it out. See if he's still there. Because that's exactly what we need. We need people who, you know, don't actually have any skin in the game, but have the expertise to help us figure out a logical, appropriate response as we move forward. So thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. We have another caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO. Who's this?
Hello.
Hi. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO. Who are you?
My name is Arthur.
Hi, Arthur. Welcome. What's on your mind?
The previous caller brought up that issue of developers wanting to tear buildings down and put up, you know, replacements.
I did that, not the caller. It was me.
Okay. So that was my thinking as well. And I just feel like the landlord class really benefited from the Trump tax break. And
yes.
That's one of the things that's carrying the economy, our great economy going on, is benefiting the landlord class. But I wanted to tell you, Joanne, why I voted for you.
Oh, okay.
Well, do you know Mark Lakeman?
Yes.
Well, I agree with him on his solutions and his designs for helping homeless people adapt in the conditions that they face immediately. I really liked his tent encampment R2-D2 replacement design.
Yes.
I felt bad that it was just pushed aside as if, oh, well, it wouldn't work. So that's why I voted for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay.
It's good to know. And, you know, I think people had a clear choice, right? People had a choice between let's just out of sight, out of mind, move them to a jail and hope that they're able to get to resources, or let's be a little bit more humane and actually try to do what we can to help people be successful.
Well, his tent encampment was what I like particularly, and I hope you get to work with that idea more while you're in office. I hope.
I hope so, too. Okay. And, yeah, I have a really wonderful relationship with Right to Survive, so I'm looking forward to leaning on their expertise and actually moving houseless people from the street into permanent housing.
All right. Okay. All right, Joe. Let's go.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great day. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
I haven't told you I'm very happy you're at City Hall keeping an eye on things.
Thank you.
All right. I have a question. It's kind of related to this. My daughter had brought it up, and I'm not sure what's going on with that.
Okay.
It's another city ordinance that where they want to, the proposal is to do something about abandoned or houses that need repair.
I'm sorry, abandoned or what?
Abandoned houses or houses that are in need of repair.
Right.
And some kind of notification being given to the owners to require them to either fix up the house or something will happen. I'm not sure what the process is planned to be.
This is
but it reminded me. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
It reminded me of what happened in Northeast Portland, where actually there were building inspectors who actually went around trying to find building code violations and then citing the homeowners, and then they would get liens on their property, and that's how they lost their home.
Right.
A few of them did. So I'm wondering, do you know anything about this
yes.
new one?
I think you're talking about is a ordinance that actually speeded up the process for the zombie homes, right? We have absentee landlords that have homes that have been boarded up it takes the city of Portland today 7 years to condemn one of those gypsy homes, right? A home that nobody's living in, is just boarded up, it's an eyesore in the neighborhood. And so the city council last year passed a ordinance that allowed them to speed that process up. So rather than 7 years, it now takes about somewhere between 9 months and a year.
Okay. And the concern she had was in the wording of that is houses that need to be fixed up, not necessarily abandoned homes. And that reminded both of us about how the chronic nuisance ordinance was supposed to be for absentee landlords, but it was used against grandmas in their own houses.
Well, as you know, we always have to keep an eye on the difference between what the intent of a law is and how it's actually implemented, right? Because you and I could read the same law and read it totally different ways, right? So we just have to be mindful if we see that this law is being used as a takings mechanism. I mean, I hear today that nonprofits and homeowners are constantly getting knocks on the door, first for people trying to buy their property dirt cheap for less than a third of what it's worth, and B, once they find out they can't steal it from them in that way, then they start calling building inspectors and start calling complaints, noise complaints, and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's been a tactic that developers and unscrupulous people have used for a long time to try to get properties that they want. And quite frankly,
that's what she was wondering, if this is some kind of a way for developers just to get property quicker and not actually, and her concern was for people who actually live in houses that may be a little run down.
Well, I mean, the reality is that, you know, there's this catch-22, right? If people are renters in a house that's run down, most renters don't want to complain about the rundown conditions because they don't want their rent to go up, right? And until we figure out a way in the city of Portland to make sure that we can have housing at every income level in every neighborhood, we will continue to see this kind of displacement happen. And so I will be keeping an eye on it. And I would encourage you to tell your daughter that if she comes across a situation where that looks like that's what's happening, that she should give me my office a call.
I think she was more concerned about homeowners who live in their own home and the house just needs repair. Are they going to be harassed?
Well, not by this particular ordinance, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other laws on the books that could make it hard for them to stay in their homes. I mean, we should be actually assisting seniors, right, to make their homes energy efficient, but you can't make them energy efficient unless you've done some basic repair. So it's got to be in good, like you have to have a good roof, you've got to have a good infrastructure in order to do that, right?
Yeah.
And of course, as you know, that's the second largest expense that people have is is right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call. Right. It's been a long time since I've talked to
you. Yes, and I'm glad to talk to you. And you
likewise.
Keep on doing what you do.
You know it. That's all I can do. You have a great day. Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Do we have any other callers on the line? Nope. All right. Well, let me tell you what's coming up today on the Boo. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, the Heather McCoy Show will talk to Gizmodo.com journalist Kashmir Hill about her attempt to block the Big Five tech firms completely out of her life for 6 weeks. Oh, I'd love to figure out how to do that. Then in the second half of the hour, she will talk to activists from Municipal Broadband PDX about starting a muni network for Portland. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Nyman spends the hour with Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, whose latest book is the novel Sketchtastity. All of this cable programming is made possible by members' support. If you are not a member today of KBOO, you could become one very easily by going to kboo.com and clicking on the button marked donate. Thank you so much for those of you who are already members, because that's how we stay on the air. Nothing like listener-supported radio. Nothing like being able to connect directly with folks who are having an impact in our community. And so let me go back and give you information again about the meeting tonight. As I stated, this evening from 6 to 8 at Maranatha Church will be the community listening session with Mayor Wheeler and Chief Outlaw. And that's from 6 to 8. Maranatha's at 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. And I understand that there's going to be a rally outside about an hour beforehand. Are there other callers? Good morning, Don. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi there, good friend.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm getting well. I'm almost getting out of the recovery period, so I'm doing better.
Well, anyway, sorry to hear that you were not 100%.
You know, I'm getting there. I saw you back when it was just weeks. It's now almost 5 months. I'm getting well.
All right.
I'm good, but I wanted to call you about housing because my wife taught all that stuff, and so I know a little bit derivatively. We had our house weatherized when we, you know, fixed it up.
Right.
And one of the things that we noted is a lot of houses that are not brick are not fixed to their foundation.
Right. That's right.
So that is something people really need to look at. It's fairly easy to get that done, but it's a thing that you don't realize if you haven't looked and thought about it.
Right,
so
that's right.
And the other thing is, when you're doing weatherization stuff on this thing, that's when you can get your seismic stuff done at the same time.
Well, see, that's exactly, I'm thinking that there are opportunities for real partnerships, especially with the Portland Clean Energy Fund Initiative.
Oh, yeah.
And the job force training requirement. I think that there are real opportunities, so which is really why I wanted to slow it down and look at just how we create win-win-wins all Portlanders benefit from this opportunity.
The other thing that we need to be thinking about, and it's difficult because it goes against everything systemic that we have been practicing, is that land is more of a utility than a commodity.
Oh.
And until we start valuing the common use of these things and where things are placed and how streets are run and everything that makes a city a place where people want to live, until we see that as a primary value, we're always going to be flummoxed by developers and leveraging and this sort of stuff. We just have to decide. We need to control this because it's a utility.
I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I think the sad thing is that we are in a time, you might have heard that the federal government has designated all of downtown Portland an opportunity zone.
So that
fat cats can invest money downtown Portland and get a 10-year federal tax break. That's part of the work that the current president or resident in the White House has put in place. Yes.
Yeah, it's just pure colonization.
Exactly.
They come in here, they take our money, they take it out of the state. No,
yes.
I don't want any of that.
Well, I mean, I have been asking both at the federal level. I had this conversation with Senator Wyden. I've asked at the state level. So what can we do in Oregon to recapture some of that money? Because, you know, they may have a sweetheart deal with the federal government, but they don't have to have a sweetheart deal with the city or the state.
Amen.
And so no one has come up with any good responses for me yet. So hopefully somebody in the listening audience will start working on that and tell me how I can actually have an impact by, you know, it's fine if they want to get a 10-year federal tax break, but they're going to pay a lot more at the state level or at the local city level. I'm appalled to even think that the state of Oregon would have the nerve to put in an application to imply that the entire downtown Portland is an opportunity zone and is desperate for investments. How crazy is that?
If you're talking predator money, this is as desperate as it always is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Chasing the dollars, right? Because it wouldn't.
The last four is it? Don't let money run you, but we are, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Right, right. Listen to what we say and then follow the money, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm so glad you're there because you know what's going on and you keep it open. We can change this. We can have a democracy. We can have a caring community. We can do this.
I believe that. And I got to tell you, I talk to people so often who are telling me, we're with you. You know, I mean, it's been a really good experience. And again, I've only been there 8 weeks. It's a 4-year term. So, you know, they may change their mind. But right now, people are really interested in really making fundamental changes that have an impact on working people's day-to-day life. Right. That's what people want to see.
I keep running into people who love you, so you're loved.
I love hearing that. Yeah, people crack up when they see me on the bus or on the Max. Like, oh, you ride the bus? You ride Max? Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. You want to drive? You want to park?
Right. I said, I can't afford to park downtown. You know what it costs to park downtown? Especially.
So it's
been fun. I'm enjoying myself, and it's wonderful to be exactly where you believe you're supposed to be, doing the exact work you're supposed to be doing.
Isn't it all?
So some days life is good. Thank you so much for your call, and I'm so happy to hear that you are on the mend. Have a great day.
I'll be seeing you soon.
Thank you. Okay. We have another call on the line. Hello. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO. I'm sorry I didn't get your name.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hey. Good morning. This is Jared.
Hey, Jared. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm living the dream.
Heck yeah, you're awesome, man. You're inspiring.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was wondering if you could somehow force the insurance companies to include earthquake insurance, because I think right now you have to pay for that separately. And it seems like we should all have that.
Well, you would think that in the Pacific Northwest. Well, I mean, that's a good question, right? Just like places that have hurricanes, I think you have to pay for that separate too, right?
Like, it just seems like it should be included since we know we're going to get it, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I personally think insurance companies are the biggest ripoff on the public imaginable, right? We all pay into insurance on a regular basis. And then the moment you need it, what happens? They start trying to find reasons as to why you shouldn't be paid your claim. I'm one of those universal healthcare people. Do away with the middleman. Get rid of the insurance companies. But as far as homeowners, auto insurance, it's all the exact same way. You know, we just pay because we've been taught, right? You got to have insurance because if something bad happens, you want to replace what you have.
I bet you the majority of people don't have earthquake insurance.
I would bet that's absolutely right. I that's a really good question. I think as we start getting into this seismic upgrade conversation, that will be something that we could certainly gather information on. Because I think you're right. I think, you know, just like people who live in hurricane areas, right? Most people aren't getting that extra insurance if they don't absolutely, especially if they have limited resources, right? People who have a lot of money, they probably get it all. But people who are working for a living and are making choices, right? What do I have to pay for? I think you're right. I think if we did a survey, we would find out most people don't have it. If you have property that you want to survive a major earthquake, I would encourage people to get it. If they can afford to get it, they should have it.
All right. Well, it's been on my mind, and since you seem to be the leader, I just wanted to relay that to you.
Well, I appreciate it. I know that we have no authority to regulate insurance companies, right? As a city council, we just have, that's just so out of our sphere of influence. That could be a legislative proposal, though. But I don't even know that the legislature could actually regulate the insurance industry. So that requires some research. But I appreciate you putting the bug.
You have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you so much. Appreciate you putting the bug in my ear, and I guess I'll have to do some research on that. Any other callers on the line? Excellent. So again, I want to make sure that you have information about next week, next Wednesday. We will bring back the ordinance that actually pushes a pause button on the implementation of the URM placarding and seismic upgrade requirement that the city of Portland passed last year before I got to the city council in October of last year. We will vote on that at city council next week. So if you want to weigh in, please, I encourage you to email all the city council members and do it all on one email so we know everybody got it, to make sure your voice is heard. I want to remind you once again of the community listening session around TextGate with the police officer who had the very friendly relationship with Mr. Joey Gibson from the Patriot Prayer. That listening session will be this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. at Maranatha Church. And Maranatha Church, once again, is at 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. It will run from 6 to 8 p.m. And I hope people will go and share their lived experience. I think unless you have seen it with your own eyes, unless you have seen the video that community members have collected, you just would be shocked to know just how protective of Patriot Prayer and other white supremacist Portland police officers have been as compared to activists who show up to say, no, we don't want hateful people in our community. I have watched video, I've seen it with my own eyes, and it's pretty appalling when you think, why are they pointing weapons at the good guys as compared to people who don't live in our state who come down here to promote violence and to promote hatred and to promote excluding people who aren't white male middle class. I just don't understand that, and I've seen it over and over again. And you might remember, we're still waiting for the Portland Police Bureau and the mayor to finish their investigation of the August protests where community members were harmed and one gentleman was almost killed. Sounds like we got other callers on the line. Good morning, Tony. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning. You might have responded to this already because the radio was off for a few minutes, but did you read Dan Salzman's opinion piece yesterday in the Oregonian?
Somebody sent it to me, but I haven't really read it yet. I kind of glanced at it, but it really, yeah, I glanced at it. I didn't actually read it in detail.
Okay, it's a very convincing opinion piece, and I'm glad I heard what you had to say this morning because it refutes a lot of what he said. So I'd suggest if you have a chance to look at it, maybe even respond in the newspaper, because I thought it was kind of harsh on you.
Ah, yes. Well, you know, the Oregonian didn't like the fact that I had directed my bureaus to not enforce this new law. And they you might have seen the editorial, Hardesty, a council of one.
No, I missed that one, but that's what the thing dealt with yesterday.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure they probably reached out to a former Commissioner Dan Salzman and encouraged him to write it, in my opinion, piece to refute my reasoning for just putting a pause on it. And the bottom line is people elected me to lead. They didn't elect me to just like do whatever somebody else did before I was there if I have better information. And I feel like with all the outswell of community opposition, that it was worth it for us to take the time to slow it down and do it right.
Okay, yeah, I'm glad you spoke to that.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you, and I will read Salzman's piece today.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi. Could you put the emails of the policemen on the website, city website?
What policemen?
The emails between the police officer and the white supremacist.
I believe it is actually on Portland Police Bureau's website. I believe they put the entire packet that they sent to Willamette Week on their website last week. At least that's what I was told. You're welcome. Any other callers on the line? Good morning, LJ. Whoa, that's a voice from the past. Hey, LJ, how are you?
I am so good, Joanne. I am getting older.
No.
I have to tell you, Joanne Bowman Hardesty, that you have been an inspiration to me for more years than I care to remember.
Oh, cut anyway, that out.
well, that's a fact, Jack. And we go back to the Eric Sten, Alan Kraft days.
Oh,
that's
yes, we do. Yep, we.
That's
yep.
How far back we go? Okay. So I just have one little point I want to make.
Okay.
Okay. As you may or may not know, Chief Outlaw was a guest on Lars Larson's show.
Oh yes, way back. Yes, right after the August protest. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Chief Outlaw of the Antifa people.
Yeah, actually, you're paraphrasing. What she actually said was, "It's kind of like a schoolyard fight, right? You go out
right.
to the school, you tell somebody to meet you for lunch for a fight, you beat their butt, and then they whine, right?
Right.
You know, you and I know Lars Larson, right? We've
right.
been around long enough to know Lars Larson and how he rolls."
And who his demographic is.
And who he's pandering to, right?
Yes.
And so when I first read that, I thought, well, wow, that's kind of weird, A, for a police chief to say that, and B, mm-hmm. that she was not appropriately staffed to understand where she was going and what his goal was in actually getting her into that conversation, right? Because mm-hmm. Lars was looking for a soundbite. And so I did something radical. Guess what I did? I picked up the phone and called Chief Outlaw.
And
said, like, what's up with this? Right? When I called her, she said, you know, Joanne, you were the first person to call me and ask me what I meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There had been lots of newspaper articles, lots of radio talk, but nobody had actually gone to her to ask her what was up with that. And that kind of touched me. I was like, that kind of broke my heart. Because she said, you know, I spent 6 months, my first 6 months going from reception to reception with people saying, I got your back. The reality is that she's in a police force that doesn't want her. They wanted Mike mm-hmm. Marshman because Mike Marshman wasn't going to make them do anything different.
Right. Well, you know, Joanne, we have to realize that law enforcement is actually a brotherhood.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is a white brotherhood, primarily.
Well, duh.
Just saying.
Welcome to me.
Yeah,
Joanne, welcome to Minneapolis.
Right. Yeah, just in case people didn't know, right?
Yeah, right. Francis made a comment a couple of days ago about why law enforcement can't, who don't feel the same way that others do. Why don't they say anything? And the reason that they don't say anything, Francis, if you're still listening, is because they can't. Because one day they're going to need backup.
That's right.
And if you step over the thin blue line,
right,
they're going to hang out. You're going to get hung out to dry.
Well, you know, thank goodness when Sergeant Lewis made that racist comment at roll call, there were three mm-hmm. sergeants that turned him in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So hopefully we're starting to change that narrative where they don't feel that they have to support the stupidity that they see their colleagues being engaged in. But that mm-hmm. that was the first time I've actually publicly seen that police officers turned in other police officers for really egregious behavior. But the bottom line is that we gave our power away to the police union decades ago. If you look at the union contract, the union has all the power. The city has almost none. And,
right. You
know, so my goal is to scrap what we have and start over, right? And
right. If
we got police officers that don't want to have a contract that makes sense, that allows them to be fired, if they mm-hmm. are, if the police chief and the mayor says they should be fired, guess what? They should be fired. So
No, Joanne. They should go on paid administrative leave.
Right.
And spend and have a wonderful vacation.
Yes.
And hang out and wait for it to go down the memory hole and then start all over again.
Well, that's what we've been doing. That hasn't worked well so far. Well, it works well for them. Yeah, it works well for them, but it certainly doesn't work well for taxpayers. It doesn't work well for anybody that wants police accountability, and it doesn't work well to build a community police force. And
right.
So I think that they're a little nervous. Portland Police Association is a little nervous, and they should be, because I'm going to continue to speak the truth as I see it, and if they don't like it, oh well. And guess what? You get the last word because we are out of here. Thank you so much for your call. And you know, the good news is that we are getting older, because if we weren't, then that is a worse outcome. I am Joanne Hardesty. This has been Voices from the Edge, and it's been my absolute pleasure to be here with you. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that glitter is gold? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up,
jump, jump.
Stand up for your rights.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light. What you gonna we gonna do? Stand up for a yeah, right. Yeah, so yeah. You better get up.
Stand up
in the morning.
Is hiring. We are seeking a full-time chief engineer. Applications are due by midnight on Monday, March 4th to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214, or by emailing engineerhire@kboo.fm. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regards to the minimum qualifications and by answering the following question. Why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/engineer2019. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, for more